bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hoo boy.
And Bryce Castillo.
Hey, that's me, everybody.
I'm trying to figure out which Mythbuster you look the most like right now, Brian.
Oh, no. My goal is to be the superposition, right? Where it's like, and it's perfect now because I have just enough of a ghost of the grown-in shadow of a beard, but I still have the walrus-like handlebar mustache kind of ghosting in there. I'm the secret love child of Adam and Jamie.
You know, speaking of trying to grow facial hair, which I am not trying to do. All I can grow is a goatee, by the way. I just grow goatees, which means I know I was born for supervillain status. I found a thing because my eyebrows are thinned out, whatever. I have severe eczema, right? And, you know, doing some research on that, we should talk about that before, like how looking online and doing blind searches or trying to do it like incognito mode so you don't get advertising for every single pharmaceutical in the world.
Yes.
I came across a Reddit forum, which I wasn't looking for, but I found this. I'm like, well, this is interesting. It was people who are using Rogaine or minoxidil to grow facial hair.
Yeah.
And it was a forum of guys who were spreading it on their faces and stuff to do that.
Apparently that super totally works, by the way. Also, getroman.com/rogue. Use promo code rogue. Check out. some of us have been looking into this.
I'll tell you what. I want to get it all over my face so I look like the wolf boy from the Mexican circus.
Just put it. you know what? Just do a patch right underneath your eye.
You're mostly there, Justin.
I don't need a lot. I just need to get over that hump.
I would love to see the clickbait ad that just says this one trick will totally hide your eye bags. And the one trick is to put Rogaine right underneath your eyes. So you just grow an island of beard hair underneath them.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Like, you know, for winter times, you know, do the winter facial hair.
Yeah. Keep warm.
Yeah. So anyhow, thought I'd share that with everybody in the too much information category of weird things.
It is weird.
It is just one quick side jag. It is surprising to me, like how not a thing it is to use any of those products is now. Like when we were 30 years ago, it was like a thing if you were bald or balding or whatever, and now it's a choice. Like leaving your shoelaces untied, it's like it's a lifestyle choice. Like yeah, I don't give an F word. I'm just gonna rock it bald.
Oh yeah, my family. My dad's bald, my brother's bald, and then my dad's brother has a full head of hair, and then I have the full head of hair, right? But I knew when I'm in my early 20s, I didn't know where that coin was going to land, and I was still, you know, showbiz, whatever. And I told myself, like, I don't think I'd look good with the, you know, bald head. So, like, I'm like, oh, if the genetic lottery said, nope, you get your dad's side, I was like, yeah, totally cool. I would have been, you know, I would have used whatever means necessary to do that. Fortunately, I didn't have to, but I had a friend that, like, I remember his hair was thinning. He came to me and he's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking about maybe doing that. I'm like, dude, do it. Like it's what cares, yeah. You know, like it's not like you're doing anything wrong. You know, it's like not going to align your resume
or even I'm going to use the word weird. Or let's say you're not even doing anything weird in a world where all of us are more conscious of being on screen. And as more of our communications is in the form of miniature press releases, whether it's in, you know, 15 second TikToks or Instagram videos or what have you. I don't know. There's sort of a literacy of how you want to present yourself that has become ubiquitous that I think is really interesting.
Yeah. And I think anybody who wants that, fine. Like, yeah, I don't hesitate for a moment to think, oh geez, what, you know, I'm glad we're past that point, you know, for the most part. So, gentlemen, while ago, we talked about some different ideas, like the future of social media, the future of being like a YouTuber or whatever. And one of our panelists had this very, I'm not going to use the word idiotic, but suggestion of like, what if you just had a bunch of like artificial followers and it gave you the same sort of feedback? And I'm like, that's the worst idea anybody could ever possibly have, and it will never happen. End of story. Now, moving on to our next topic. Oh, wait. Apparently, this is happening.
First of all, Justin, are you as confused as I am as to which of the two of us was the one that had that idea?
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember who did this.
More like a Brian idea, because I know I've been infatuated with the idea of, we've already had artificial players replace content creators, and it occurs to me that the idea of artificial consumers that actually are in charge of real money, real clicks, real views, real shares, and all that stuff fascinates me. So that sounds like something I would have said if I was going to bet.
I'm not naming names. All I'm saying is this. We're going to put this in the category. Whoever said it was the "you were right." Andrew admits you were right category. I think we're like two in a row about this too.
Oh, that's right. Because last week I solved the mystery of the cave with the pads of dinosaur chicken feet on there.
Very disturbing trend here in Weird Things. I'll tell you. What this is there's a Wired an article called "Welcome to Botnet, where everyone's an influencer." And the story basically is that Billy Chasen, who created Chartbeat and Turntable FM, is now worked on has a project where what it is a basically trying to figure out how. I read the article. I'm like, I think I get what they're talking about, but not quite sure. Basically created like a botnet, and what it will do is post stuff, whatever, it will tell you. It's like its own social network, and he says they got like, you know, hundreds of thousands of bots that will then tell you what's cool or what they like or whatever.
I mean, if you recouch it in more Hollywood terms, if I were to say, hey, we have a team that created a focus group simulator. It's machine learning algorithm. It's based on statistically significant hundreds of thousands of posts or whatever. We've tested it against real life focus groups, and it seems to have a 98% tracking, you know, to be similar on both. It will cost you pennies on the dollar compared to a real focus group. Seems like you'd go for that, right? And
well,
so
it's not even for a focus group. It's literally, if you go to, it's actually an app now called Botnet on the App Store. Literally what it is, it's just you post stuff and only bots respond to you, okay? And I think it's silly, but in a way you think about is it any more sillier than a video game score? Is it any sillier than like, you know, winning some in-game prize? So
I'm signing up for Botnet right now.
Yeah, sorry. This is, we're going to have to, Bryce, you're going to have to edit all this out as we all sign up for Botnet.
It's called Botnet, bots only, a social network simulator.
So when you start up the app, it says, warning, you are about to interact with bots. Everything you say and do here is private. There are no other real people. They have been trained with millions of conversations online, and that makes them sometimes unpredictable. And there's an I understand button.
Well, and I'll tell you what's not weird is Microsoft Flight Simulator. Why wouldn't you have a social media simulator? Like that seems like a fine thing to, I mean, as the father of a 12-year-old who recently had a video just kind of explode on TikTok, to the point of actually outperforming some episodes of Scam Nation and Scam School.
I love that you have that metric ready to go in your head as you're watching your daughter's, you know, TikTok.
Well, like, she's all excited, and I have to think of, like, well, how much of this do I want to feed into? How hard do I want to high five on all of this, you know?
How am I going to top her?
Or specifically, how much do I want to teach her the idea that her value as a person is determined by some numbers from an app algorithm or what have you? And in fact, like, she was kind of upset at one point because I wasn't happy enough for her, but it's like, kid, it's complicated, you know, like, I don't want to encourage you to be a hollowed out ghoul that chases whatever the next, you know, gives you bigger numbers.
But I want to be like you, Dad.
Yeah. it's too late for me, young one.
All right. So I just posted on Botnet. doing my podcast Weird Things. It currently is climbing up over 27,000 likes, and the comments are, this is the perfect episode to get me through the worst day. I'm a musician myself and I love this. I'm a fan of the song I Want You by The Strokes. There's a lot of emojis. And then you hear your mom say, wait, that's not normal. What happened? What's different about Weird Things? I need a source on this ASAP.
WeirdThings.com.
I don't know exactly how much this necessarily passes the Turing test, but it is like authentic, random. Like, this does look like the comment thread on like a very famous person's Instagram.
If I can, if I can inject some conspiracy, it's called Botnet, and the very first thing it does is it asks you for a first and last name, and it you have to give it a picture for an avatar.
I just signed up, and the first thing it did was have a whole conversation. Just come up and said, "OMG, Brian Brushwood just signed up for Botnet. Oh my God, it's Brian Brushwood!" And now I'm watching as it populates. It says, "If on my behalf, it tweeted." Hey everyone, it's me, Brian. I just set up my botnet, and I'm excited to hang out with you all. Mm. I'm watching it go from 5,000 to 10,000 to 12,000 likes, and I'm seeing.
You can and the extras. You can actually, for 99 cents more, you can add troll bots.
somebody just botneted me. Ugh, I'm just here for the comments. Great. Now I need to see the rest of the picture.
I wrote, hey, everyone, I'm sorry, but I'm not part of that world.
Somebody just responded, this is my spirit animal. By the way, I'm up to 23,000 likes for the post that I did not make on my behalf.
It's certainly neat. Are you guys feeling, how's everyone's endorphin levels doing right now?
There is an element of just watching likes skyrocket that is on some level therapeutic. If you've made your living on the internet, like there is like a, yes, you know that it is totally fake, but watching likes just skyrocket into the tens of thousands, there is something there that I think is a perversely therapeutic to me.
So here is, if I were a sinister bastard, it would occur to me that a very powerful end game to this would be identifying who is both a botnet user and an actual creator out in the real world, and then just suggesting, oh man, what if, crazy idea, what if we had also created real life accounts on YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. Wouldn't it be great if they just showed up and showed you the same enthusiasm that you've come to enjoy on Botnet? Wouldn't that be worth, like, I don't know, money?
Would creators, I mean, creators already know that those exist, that those account farms exist.
But
I guess
it would be the normal people who would be unfamiliar to that.
It could be, like, but I'm telling you, seriously, like, so I put up a photo of, like, the thing at for Shark Week, and so it's, like, the image of my arm with the LED thing. And it's smart enough to go, like, I wrote a work in progress, and I see people who are going, like, that's a very realistic piece of artwork. Other things, like, another bout of artwork stuff. And then, of course, comment, no way, that's a cat.
I'm just going to tweet out hashtag weird things, all caps, FTW. There you go. I'm just going to make a post
on your botnet.
Well, there's already 1,000 likes. I mean, apparently a lot of people like hashtag weird things. 3,000 people, as a matter of fact. Sorry.
I mean, that's
5,000.
I mean, that's the thing to think about, too, is the idea that, you know, we talk about the future where you have like the one monolithic super intelligent AI. But imagine we create the one where there's trillions of bots that are smarter than humans that are out there. And you create stuff that's sort of like lurking or whatever. They're kind of like tribbles in a sense.
Man. Or as 1969 Catherine botneted me. I'm pretty sure the guy on my right is my stepmom.
Oh, man. Can they do this for podcasts? Recording the Weird Things podcast. We're at like 4,000 likes right now.
The moment he found out he had to put his D word in his face, I was so proud.
And this is the wholesome, the wholesome bot.
Classic.
Already, it is way more coherent than my regular Twitter feed.
Yes! It really is. Quote, I'm going to show you what's coming to you.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God. Recording the Weird Things podcast. I'm still confused as to why he recorded himself hanging in the bathroom.
I'm so glad that the owner of this resort is a Trump supporter. This is too close to reality. I'm not crying. You're crying. All right.
Fantastic episode. I recommend everybody listen to it. And what more can we say?
Yeah.
This is pretty cool. It's interesting to hear a project like this go from like, here's the idea, here's the pitch for an idea, and also we have apps out now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I think that is part of some of the magic at play here, is that you can learn about it and then go do it immediately.
But and touching back on what we talked about before and kind of, I think when we went deeper into the subject, is like, so much of the algorithm that decides what gets in front of people is we don't know. We don't understand. We don't get to see it. But there's a neat idea to take the algorithm that decides what other people get to say and create this sort of like bot-like layer sort of thing that said like, you know, like, oh, here's an Instagram photo. And it's like, oh, like you only got this many tweets. And on the Instagram botnet, you know, this was the reaction to it. And this is how you could calibrate it to like real humans. And, you know, I think like you were talking about that, Brian, the idea of that feedback loop would be great if it was more anthropomorphized.
It is a little bit about like how, let's say, 538 constantly capital T, capital A talks about the algorithm or whatever, or the model that they have.
Yeah.
I just sent botnet. I just posted, I hate bots. So far, it's been liked by 13,000 bots.
Yeah. Well, let me see how many bots I've been liked by, Brian.
Here we go. Top comment, PewDiePie should play Minecraft.
I mean, finally, someone's brave enough to say it.
So you're telling me my life story of being a dog, and then you posted a photo of me and your dog? Yes, I did, but it just happened.
My first one's at 180,000 likes, guys.
I love how, by the way, this initially started with the idea of whether or not this would be compelling, and we've completely derailed the show.
I'm already deep into self-evaluation about whether or not I will allow my children to download this or tell them about it or anything.
Oh, I can see we are very, very very close to a crappy version and not too far away from a good version, which will be a completely AI Tinder, and you know you'll go into it and you're going to choose the you know, particularly the, you know, you're going to choose the Tinder date sort of thing, and it's going to be, you know, images and videos and sexy talk and all sorts of stuff.
Can I throw this at you? I don't, and keep in mind I'm pretty far removed from the dating scene, but I don't know that I hate the idea of like, hello, welcome to Bot Tinder, where you have to play practice rounds against a computer in terms of being quick to respond, clever in your retorts, charming, thoughtful, clearly indicate that you're listening to the other partner or whatever. Like, you know, you're like basically you won't know whether or not you're talking to another person of your desired matchup relationship or a bot, but you're better off treating both the same, because if it is a bot, then that all contributes to your score and your placement and its confidence when it puts you in front of other people. Is that like an unfair extroversion bias or something? Or
yeah, I would hate if I thought that. The problem is, like, I don't think it's enough to assume that every other human person will behave in the way that the app wants you to. And so if I'm like, oh, finally, hey, someone is finally messaging me back, and then at the end it's like, congrats, you've been talking to a bot, I'm going to be incredibly pissed off.
Oh, no. I mean, it would never say congrats that. It would definitely just say all of this matters, and then the congrats would come.
That's way...
The congrats would come. Oh, and think about this. Somebody might be talking to a fusion of multiple people where some of the responses are from one human A and the other is human B. So it's doing A-B testing, seeing how quickly you respond to what witticism in vaguely parallel conversations. And then the congrats is we did it. We found your match. But you're right. This is a total Black Mirror episode.
I mean, I think there's something to the idea of having, you know, like, hey, if you want to improve, use our simulator, and you know it's a simulator, and understand, like, here's, you know, yeah, this is a racist joke. Don't make that. You know, like, don't send the D-pic right away. Like, don't do this, which, you know, would maybe teach sociopaths how to behave more like humans, which is good or bad, which is possible. But, you know, of course, the problem with, you know, dating apps is that, like, if you're using a dating app because you're trying to meet the person, the dating app is incentivized not to let that happen. The dating apps are they're incentivized to keep you paying your monthly subscription, which is, you know, always the sort of thing I always wondered, like, you know, when you go use a service like that, like, you know, you think, like, what's your business, you know, in your best case, if you give the customer exactly what they want, they use you for 2 months and then they never use your product again.
Right.
Because they found happiness.
Yeah. That's the marketing campaign for Hinge, I think. It's like delete Hinge. You know, go use the app and then delete it because you found the person that you were looking for.
Well, and you know, the problem too, like a lot of apps was like they early on specifically they would hire people to go out on like short dates and stuff like this. Because if you had somebody who's paying like $50 a month and let's say they're 4 or 5 months in, they're at a risk of canceling their membership. Some of these dating apps, what they would do is they might actually get you a real date, like 30 or 40, like meet with a girl somewhere, whatever, for coffee, you know, like, oh, we're going to meet at a bar here, whatever. And they'd be like, oh, cool, this is great. Well, you know, stay in touch, blah, blah, blah. Wow. That was the thing that was happening because you could pay, you know, you'd pay somebody like, you know, $40 to go meet with somebody in real life and set them up to do 4 or 5 in a night. And so you're paying them $40 to help retain this person to the membership.
Yeah, wow. It's like Netflix or any other these subscription things. You just really need to give them a win condition at a certain interval. Like every 3 months, they got to think, oh, this is worth it because that'll extend the life cycle of that subscription for another 3 to 5 months.
You also had where they would keep like when you sign the agreement to let you for your profile, particularly in the case of women, they would leave these apps, but then their profiles would still be circulating, but with different names and stuff, with their images and whatever, because the apps were trying to maintain the idea there was a far more availability.
Hmm. That's interesting because I know like on Tinder, one of the things that you can report people for is like this app or this profile feels like a bot. Like it's mostly just if you feel like this is someone trying to spam or trying to get people off the service or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know if Tinder does it now, but also like you can, because they also have from the outside, they're trying to prevent people who are trying to do services and create this stuff like this. But that turned out that was something they found on the internally that they were doing this, particularly when a lot of these apps were starting out, because you start a dating app and first thing you get on, there's 1,000 dudes looking for women, let's say, and there's no women there. What do you do? Create the illusion of all these women there.
Didn't we talk about a bot that would like auto translate gendered pronouns, he to her, she to him, and all that, and allow basically horny dudes to talk to other horny dudes?
Amazing,
man. I must have read. I forget where I read it. Maybe one of the fans can find it out. But it's like I can almost see a place for that in this ecosystem where it's like, all right, I'm an AI bot. I'm reading the tea leaves. I see what time it is. I see the way you're talking. Here's what you really want. Let me find someone else willing to swap pronouns. And neither of you know that the other is, you know, looking for a one-night hookup.
The crying game.
Yeah. but like I'm almost certain that's happened. I think somebody wrote a bot for Tinder that did that automatically. And that was the punchline. But it seems like you could build that in.
Yeah, it would play the aggressive talk against other aggressive talk, but with flipped pronouns. So
Correct. So basically it registered a bunch of supposedly female accounts and then would basically just play messenger swapping pronouns between really amped up dudes.
A very sassy version of like playing all the like chess grandmasters against each other, right?
Exactly.
But with dirty talk.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, if that excites you enough to coax some money out of your pocket, then you should head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. That is where you can support this show. Patreon.com/weirdthings is your number one place for you to get the custom RSS feed. Make sure that you get these episodes earlier than anybody else. And know that you are keeping this show going. That is patreon.com/weirdthings.
Gentlemen, I have an ambitious mission.
Go on.
I need about $200 million.
Let me, before I go look at those couch cushions, I mean, not that it's not going to be a great idea, but I mean, there's a lot of couch cushions to look under for that 200 mil. Maybe just a back of the notebook sketch here.
I think if we combined like the net value of like, I mean, everybody who listens to this podcast and maybe what we could all put on our credit cards. And that's what I'm basically asking is every single one of our listeners to consider backing this mission. Okay.
I mean, to the full extent of their current credit, like all of us max out our credit cards for this.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's to get that extra card, do this. It's for a worthy cause. Okay. It's a space mission. Oh. We want to basically get hold of like a Falcon Heavy. You know, we wanted one of those, the triple booster rockets, right? Okay.
Yep.
It's space mission and recovery. All right. And this is my plan.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard the news, but, right now, how many natural moons are around Earth?
I mean, as far as I know, we got the moon, which of course was the book, the subject of I can't even remember the title of the book from so many years ago. It suggested that it's the fact that we have only one moon that caused life to exist on planet Earth.
So we actually have an extra moon right now.
What?
We do. Well, you always want to have an extra just in case something happens to the one.
So what happens is periodically we'll capture something in orbit and, you know, something that has maybe a similar orbit to Earth. And we basically a object, which is only like a few meters across, got captured by Earth orbit. And it's actually probably going to leave next month or so. Eventually it'll get ejected and go back onto its pattern. But we've got an extra moon right now just swinging around the Earth, just hanging out. If you go look at the Wikipedia on it, though, it's amazing when you see its actual like orbital path. It's completely insane the way it's sort of like going around. It's not like spinning around like ours. It's doing this wibble wobbly thing around Earth. But we've got another moon right now.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, these two stories are related because much like the weirdo at the party, we have somebody just hovering around our orbit before he feels dejected and then heads on off to try to find somebody else at the party. We've got a moon here. We got to train it with bots on how to have interesting conversation. Hey, man,
we can go
hang
steal
around
the moon. We can go steal the moon. We could fit inside of a spacecraft, a payload. We could go steal this moon and bring it down on Earth and put it on a coffee table. Or we could sell it, wink, wink, and become the men who sold the moon.
Oh, my God. Or take it on tour just to frustrate Justin.
Sure. Let people pet a moon. We can all stand on it like the Little Prince.
Is this an intrastellar object or an extrastellar object, or I guess is it inside or outside? Because we had that one tourist that went blowing through our space I could say solar system that was not a neighbor, but I assume this is a local guy, right?
Yeah, this is terrestrial. It shares a similar orbital path as to Earth, and it just happened to get caught into our gravitational well and has been doing a little tour around there before eventually gets ejected.
This is the loneliest moon. I feel terrible for this moon. We go to the same post office.
We should bring it to Disneyland.
We hang out at the same Starbucks. We keep seeing each other, just sort of glancing at each other, him a little bit more than me. It's
only a couple meters across. I'm saying, guys, we could fit this in the back of a pickup truck. We could literally, you know, be friends with, be the best pet rock ever.
Okay, real question. What percentage of Elon Musk's attention do you think is dedicated to the idea of like, you know, I could just steal this moon?
in realistic terms, if you look at the orbital path of that thing, trying to get it would be a monumental task because you've got to be able to not just reach its orbit, but you've got to be able to match the speed of it. And then you've got to have enough fuel left to then return back to Earth and be able to do that. So it looks to me from my armchair sort of Tchaikovsky equations that this is a very, very complicated sort of procedure. Because like that's the problem with like sending, let's say, Starship even to the moon, is that, you know, getting it back, you know, which you can. It just takes a way more fuel to do that than you would think. So trying to get it, because you've got to try to reach this and, you know, match it. It would be hard, probably not impossible, when there might be a clever way to do it.
So what you're saying is there's a chance.
But I would, you know, we're living in an age, though, where it's not the most difficult. You know, it's not impossible.
Well, and that there are two factors. One is the mere fact that we detected this one indicates that there's probably more, and that there are more opportunities for that. And meanwhile, we're seeing the race to space get cheaper and cheaper, which means, and increasingly, we are recognizing as a society that attention is a currency that can be converted into dollars. So it's much like the coronavirus infecting all of North America. It's not a question of if, but when. Somebody's going to capture a moon, catch it by the tail, and take it on tour.
Yeah. Well, last week we found out that SpaceX is going to do a launch for NASA to go to, was it the asteroid Psyche, which is like got the metal asteroid, which is pretty cool. So that's a pretty cool thing. Like we're now in that age where these things are happening. And I met, this weekend, one of the people with Axiom. That's the company we talked about before that is building the private space station.
Oh, nice.
The one that they're going to attach to ISS and eventually separate and become its own thing, which is just, it's interesting because these things, you know, they're not just as Brian says, they're not just theoretical. These are things that are being done right now and, you know, can happen. That's kind of cool.
While we're on the subject, did you guys see that explosion/implosion of the test of the cylinder for the Tesla stuff, or sorry, for the SpaceX?
Yeah, so they're out in Boca Chica, which is where they're testing the different different prototypes for the new Starship. They have prototypes SN1 and SN2. SN2 is the new one with new welds and new designs. SN1 was the older one where the design it popped its top. They resealed the top and then they went to go fuel this thing up again. And basically it just ruptured from the bottom and looked like a modern rogue experiment.
It did. Well, it reminded me of Mr. Wizard because like once the bottom ruptured, it launched up because of the release of whatever gas. But then the pressure differential, the whole thing just collapsed like a tin can at the bottom of the whatever that trench is, Mariana Trench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember Mr. Wizard doing the thing with like the metal can on the stove. Where
yeah.
It just implodes. That was the phase we started to get like a little bit older and, you know, yell at the kids.
Yeah, it's pretty great. If you haven't seen it, definitely look up Mr. Wizard is a D word. That collection is so good.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an awesome person, you know, but having to deal with those kids. It's a bit of a setback, but also it was the version one that they'd already been making changes on. And so it wasn't the ideal thing. They wanted this to happen, but they also like, oh, well, we need to do these welds. And the problem they're having is like they're trying to basically take super, super, super thin tanks, do welds on them and have them strong enough to be under huge pressure, you know, and then have cryogenically cooled fuels, whatnot. So there's a lot of different factors, you know, playing into this. So stuff's hard.
It is kind of interesting, though, that we have such a focus on that level of testing. That's what's so interesting is that I don't know if there's ever in my life I would have seen coverage of like, oh, like Boeing test fails like in epic, you know, capacity, which I'm sure there have been a million of them. Right.
Like, I love this tweet that Elon Musk says. He posts it and he says, it's fine. We'll just buff it out. No big deal.
Yeah. He had a couple weird tweets like, go check out the other one he had about like male depression or whatever.
Oh, my God.
In perspective, like, what was my biggest disaster this weekend? I missed that little part from IKEA. And so I had to use a quick fix, but I know I got to go back and go get it. What's Elon's weekend like? oh, I don't know, $500,000 prototype just exploded on the path. Like, oh, geez. Dare to dream. Dare to have big of failures like that.
Exactly.
Do you guys just want to jump into picks?
Yeah, sure. I'm down for it.
All right.
Hey, so I'm tricking the family into watching a bit of that Netflix series, Lock and Key. I don't know if we've talked about it on this show, but of course, I am a tremendous fan of the graphic novel, and the rules for television are a little bit different. Stuff that you can convey subtly and mysteriously in a graphic novel, in television, you kind of sort of have to just spell out flatly, and those things tend to sound pretty silly in a television format. But the show has been good enough. It's TV-14, does an okay job of being spooky and mysterious. And to my delight, my daughter, my eldest, only watched the half of the first episode and all of the third episode, and kind of just casually was like, so you say it's a graphic novel? I don't know. Maybe I'll want to read that graphic novel. And I was like, I'll be right back. And I drove out to HQ and I grabbed the full trade set and brought it back. And I was like, well, you know, it starts off pretty harsh, but it, you know, it chills out. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. Smash cut to midnight last night. I peek in and she's halfway through the sixth book. And we spent all morning talking about it. So my pick is tentatively, I'm only three episodes in, the Netflix series Lock and Key, but 100% the graphic novel, full set, full series of Lock and Key.
I finished episode 4 yesterday, and that was the turning point for me into enjoying the show.
Oh, wonderful.
Or at least I haven't watched any more since that one, so who knows. But
oh, shoot. So that means today I have permission to go another episode forward, because I only did 3. I didn't know how many you would do.
Yeah, I thought you would have gone more. I almost texted you saying I was feeling
bad. Oh, yeah. No, we'll coordinate better. I'll go ahead and watch number 4 on there.
Yeah, I think it's all right. Like, you can definitely feel that it has got a for tweens vibe to it, and some of my initial hangups.
What was that movement?
For tweens.
Yeah.
For
the old tween dance.
I'm tweening. This is what animators call tweening.
Fres is moving his arms in a very willy nilly motion as he signals that this is indeed for tweens.
The thing I didn't like in the first few episodes was that it all just felt really arbitrary and kind of, I don't know, their keys, and no one saw this key in these various places. But I think it picks up around 4, which is a long ask for a 10 episode or season,
especially for something that ever so slightly slips into feeling like a CW show here and again. Yeah. I mean, I think it's above that threshold, but man, if you ask me. I mean, which is weird because I think Lock and Key. Oh no, it was a Fox pilot. Is mm-hmm. but it was darn close to being a CW show at some point.
I like the fact that we're of a generation where we're trying to convince our kids to read comic books.
Yes, yes, 100%.
You know, we're versus our parents were like, ugh, you're reading that.
But
The Watchmen is.
I'm making excuses to my 15-year-old daughter, like, yes, the whole first comic is about nothing but the graphic, brutal, bloody murder of a man, and then also this corrupt, awful, terrible other idea. But it's gonna lighten up after that. Like I'm actively saying, like, ooh, if you could just get past that part, you're gonna love it.
Mm-hmm. Lock and Key.
So on one of my flights, they had United, as like you can watch movies and stuff on the app. And I was just looking for something that I'd seen before that I could just kill the like remaining 45 minutes to an hour. And I started watching Spider-Man Far From Home.
So again. Good.
And man, do I just love that movie. That movie's just so good. And it is just so well done in terms of like being able to own its universe and tell a fairly kind of complicated story of you know, loss and grief while being on top of a very fun and likable teen, you know, dramedy, but with Spider-Man and stuff on top. So it is, I mean, that cast is just such a murderer's row. Like, you know, if there's one thing that Marvel has done so exceptionally well is like with like Guardians of the Galaxy and then these Spider-Man movies, is like you just want to you love the like fourth or fifth most popular characters. Like there's always these little moments, like the whole relationship subplot of his buddy and the girl that he meets on the plane is just cracks me up. Like there's like never a moment where it's not, you know, doesn't just tickle me. So Spider-Man Far From Home.
I totally, and that's one of the things I think about, like what Marvel movies do well, and this movie really shines, is every character is given a moment to be interesting, to be in some ways be, if not likable because they're a villain, but to be very interesting in their own capacity. And there's little background stuff in there. I mean, from the, you know, you look at the adults are in PTSD about the world they live in, with a science teacher who now thinks witches are behind everything. You know, it's witches. You look at Flash Thompson's character, where you notice there's little things going on in the background about how, like, nobody there from the family to greet him, nobody like this, and how unloved this guy is. And so you understand why he's such a jerk. There are little details there, but if you're like, oh, I'm interested in Flash, let me watch this through, I'm like, oh, this is kind of interesting. Like, you realize it's so well developed.
Yeah, and just like the sight gags, the moment where they're in Italy and Flash Thompson is doing his vlog and he just gets nut checked by one of the other students. It's just like it's that little teen like movie kind of stuff that they do exceptionally well while they're also layering this Marvel story on top of it. So I'm here to report it's still good.
Justin, you and I had a mutual friend who said that the post-credit scene saved, his words, not mine, saved the movie. Do you feel like the movie needed saving? And was it saved by that post-credit scene?
From my perspective, it did not save that movie. It saved another movie that had so callously and ignorantly treated the characters that appeared in the post-credit scene. So I don't know. I don't know if it saved. I think that there is an element where if you know, I don't know. Can we spoil this? Like, the movie's been out for like...
Yeah, we're going to go in full spoiler mode.
Sure. So you realize at the end that Maria Hill and Nick Fury are not indeed Maria Hill and Nick Fury. They are two Skrulls, two of the Skrulls that we met in Captain Marvel. I think it did more to legitimize the Skrulls as a race that can do that, which I think is the entire purpose of them in the Marvel universe, is that some characters may or may not be Skrulls and you don't know. It did more to kind of redeem the Skrulls from where they were in Captain Marvel than it did to necessarily save anything per se in Spider-Man Far From Home. Although I think there probably would have been a case coming out of Spider-Man Far From Home that you would have felt like Nick Fury was a much more feckless character coming out of that, if you hadn't had that reveal and realized that he was literally just the fill-in while other things were going on. So I think it was more about the larger mythology than necessarily the micro of the movie itself. But I do think that it was one of my favorite moments leaving the theater. I'm like, cool, the Skrulls are important again. And Nick Fury isn't just this kind of jamoke who's getting circles run around him by, you know, Mysterio and Spider-Man at the same time.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I didn't mind it, because it sort of just conveyed that it's like humans, especially like Nick Fury level, not altered humans, just are less relevant as we move into, you know, Celestials and all that other crazy talk. So it's like, I don't know that I needed an excuse for that. Like if Nick Fury ended up looking like I don't know, a weak character in a bigger world, good. Because compared to the living gods we're about to watch in future movies, he is a weak character in a bigger world.
But I was annoyed throughout, in that like I thought that he was made dumb just for the expense of the plot, and that annoyed me, because I'm like, this is not the Nick Fury from all. And I don't, because like, We live in a world where you can have power, but power doesn't give you wisdom, and wisdom can anybody can have wisdom, and so some of the wisest characters we're supposed to have are the ones with no powers. I was just sort of like, I was a little frustrated. I'm like, man, like this is like, this feels like S.H.I.E.L.D. level writing of like having like bad, a little bit like just have the bosses be incompetent so the hero can have their story. And then I get to the end, I'm like, oh, okay, this was, you tricked me and you wonderfully did it, because I was a little, it didn't ruin it for me at all, because like every movie you have to make some sort of allowance for like, meh, but I didn't have to save the movie, but it certainly made the movie a lot smarter for me.
Yeah, I guess growing up, I've always perceived Spider-Man as a stronger, more powerful, more intelligent, more heroic character than Nick Fury. So in this, you know, wiener measuring contest, it's obvious to me that Spider-Man should win, whether he's a 17-year-old kid or not. And but, so in that regard, I didn't well, mind watching him dunk on Nick Fury.
Yeah, here's the biggest thing though, is that Nick Fury, at least in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is somebody that sees the entire field, right? We should always get the sense that what Nick Fury is telling people is like the exact need to know, because he is playing this like 3D chess thing, and you've already significantly weakened him with the whole Hydra thing, where he was slow on the uptick, but that shows how powerful Hydra was. And now, like, you kind of have to rebuild that a little bit, like, I think for his character going forward, if you want to keep him a central part of stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I agree with Andrew. It would have been something that by the end of it, it might have been like, like that Nick Fury sure seemed like an idiot in a lot of that movie. But instead, they like a total win, which,
because he's supposed to be, particularly MCU, he's the master spy. You know, he's the guy that's, you know, knows. Wouldn't be fooled by like the slip up and stuff like this that, you know, that Mysterio made or whatever, you know, in theory. And I was happy to see that, you know, kind of that it was like, because it wasn't, because Osborn, like Nick Fury is playing like a big part in the next phase too, where, you know, we're going into some sort of interstellar sort of war kind of thing. And he's got to be the mastermind behind this.
And especially without an Iron Man character. Now he is kind of the surrogate for like all human ingenuity, right? Like he is, you know, you've eliminated Iron Man and Captain America, so now he's the guy that is like the stand-in for mortals.
I gotta pick
what you got.
So over the weekend I watched a new film on Netflix, starring and co-written by Alison Brie. It is a film called Horse Girl. Anybody hear about this?
Heard name?
It. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So Alison Brie is the star. She is a kind of, you know, sort of, what would you call it? Sort of a wallflower type
shut in
adult. A little bit of a shut in. Yeah, she's kind of alone. She doesn't have many friends. She works at a craft store, and she watches this supernatural-esque show. And she's got, there's a horse that she doesn't own anymore, but she visits a lot. And, it is very similar to, someone on Twitter reminded me of this. It is very similar to Safety Not Guaranteed, both of which are, Duplass Brothers productions. And, I think it's very neat. It is, a sort of what is reality, what is dream, what is, mental illness, what is, supernatural in real life. And I think it's interesting in what it does with the ending, and I think it's also kind of it'll be a divisive and divisive ending for some folks, but I think it was a pretty good watch, and a lot of good tension, and Alison Brie's great in it. So Horse Girl on Netflix.
Cool. My pick's Jojo Rabbit. Finally saw it.
Enjoyed
it.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy. Tell me everything you thought about it. Spoilers. Start now. Go. Spoilers. Hitler's in it.
Yeah, I am. I'm a big Taika Waititi fan. I like, you know, Hunt for the Wilder People is like one of the best things ever made. If you haven't seen it, question your life choices.
Okay. What if I told you I haven't seen it because I'm saving it like my favorite dessert that I know I'm going to love?
I mean, if Taika Waititi said he wasn't going to make any more movies, and if it's a rewatchable movie too, so I think I know the framework you're into, because I have things where it's great. I'm like, I want to wait until I really, I know I will love it. I want to wait until the points where I really want to see this thing that I know I'll love.
Exactly.
But and Hunter Wilder is great. What We Do in Shadows is great. I mean, he's just, Thor Ragnarok is great. This was the kind of the most Wes Anderson kind of looking, you know, Taika Waititi movie in all the right sort of ways. Enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I thought that, you know, the kids were great. You know, Jojo, the kid who played his best friend, that kid was phenomenal.
Well, I love that moment where late in the movie is like, it seems I can't be killed. Like, as though remarking on how the script is written. It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it was so, yeah. The kids were just the standout part. Like, I would watch another movie with just those two. Because it just, yeah.
Sam Rockwell was fantastic in that. Rebel Wilson, she's always just one note, her jokes, you know, like and the those bizarre anachronisms where something happens and she goes, "Oh, im Gott." Scarlett Johansson really given a lot of runway to just crush it with being this amazing, adorable mom who you just love with all your heart.
Yeah, I would say that it's because it's a Taika Waititi movie. Everybody's going to talk like Taika Waititi. You know, you're going to get, you'll get these, that very much, modern slang will be thrown in there, whatever. And sometimes people say, like, it's like you can spot all, I love all his movies at their points. Like, that line could have been anybody could have done it. It's a funny line, but it's very much Taika just, Taika speaking through the characters. But.
Well, and I love how unapologetically mashed up it is, in fact, there's almost like an inoculation period. That first 5 minutes is just like, guys, gather around. Look, we're in Nazi Germany, so let's get it all out of our system. Everybody say it along with me. Heil Hitler, a lot of that, a lot of Heil Hitler. Let's get over the Heils, let's get over the Hitlers. Let's get used to that idea. Let's do it so much. Okay, are you ready? Now we're going to tell the story. But also, let me get you used to the fact that they're training kids for war. Okay, now, ready for the story, and go.
Yeah, it was just a really interesting telling of that, and all the things going on in the background and whatnot, and every character, like, it's another example, like Marvel, like every character that shows up is a delight, you know. And Stephen Merchant, the Nazi hunter, you know, the SS shows up at your door, you know, it's bad, but it's gonna be hilarious. Tells a kid, like, oh, you may have heard that Hitler only had one ball. It's not true, he had four.
Man, Stephen Merchant, he's tall. He's a very tall man.
Yeah.
Yes. Very tall. Very talented. Very tall. So Jojo Rabbit. It was delightful. Very, very, very delightful. So that's all I can say. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this broadcast.